all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense up here on the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful but hazy day up north. It is Wednesday, June 14th, 55 degrees for folks listening on 93.5 The Tap along the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's see, it's 45 up in Boulder Junction, Johnson Creek coming in at 56, Sparta at 46, and over in Kewaunee, 56 degrees on what should be a fair but hazy day. We'll get the full weatherology forecast coming up next hour. Coming up on the program this morning, local actions for a global problem. In this week's Climate Check, Melissa Baldoff knocks down these tired right-wing talking points that say individuals and communities and states and even countries shouldn't even try to tackle the planet's changing climate, as if one single global plan is the only course of action. So we'll talk more about that at the bottom of this hour. We will have that with Melissa Baldoff, who does our climate check each Wednesday morning with us now. Also, we'll have the latest on the arrest and arraignment on Tuesday of former President Donald Trump. I guess arrest and arraignment part deux might be a better way to put it. In our next hour, an unbalanced compromise for schools. Some key legislative committees on Tuesday took up the deal worked out between Governor Tony Evers and Republican leaders. It's an agreement that brings long overdue state funding to public schools and local governments, but also grows the size of the private school vouchers that are designed to weaken public education. We'll talk to a couple of public school advocates about that. Along the way, if you hear something that strikes you, tickles your fancy, whatever the case may be, and you want to sound off about it, our phone number here is 844-967-2789, or you can send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I'm happy to report to Aaron Zommers back in Madison that, as you can see, I'm back in the home office here. The carpet project is coming along nicely, and there really isn't anything quite like being able to just dig your toes into brand new carpeting when it comes into a room. Just feels so good up here.
You know, I wouldn't really know, because any home that I've been in or anything like that, we've usually gone from old nasty carpet to hardwood, just because that's my parents' preference.
Well, that's actually, we've done that in two rooms here over the past 10, 12 years, something like that, where we've actually put hardwood floors in. This is the first time that we've actually replaced some of the carpeted rooms in many years. And so it's just a nice feeling to have that done. Some good craftsmanship going on here. Still plenty of chaos. I asked them to do the home office first so I could get back into the cozy confines here. But, you know, there's still furniture strewn about the place, but it is coming along. So I do like that part. I wanted to ask you this question as well. It's a vocabulary question. We were at one of our favorite watering holes yesterday, and there was kind of a newer bartender there. And I don't know, not every bar is different, of course, but this particular bar kind of has a little chute where you can put the glass bottles of beer, you know, and then they kind of fall down below into a recycling bin. She was putting them down there with, the word I would use is gusto. She really seemed to enjoy throwing the bottles down there and hearing them, and it was loud. And then it got me thinking again, you know, the old man in me coming out, that she likes to throw them down there with gusto. Does anybody else use the word gusto anymore? And what old beer commercial was it? Was it the beer with gusto? That should be one of our trivia questions one of these days.
Yeah, I definitely, every now and then I'll use it, or one of my friends will use it. It is a word that's still in the American vocabulary so far as I'm aware. However, I have no idea what beer commercial used it.
Schlitz. It's actually Schlitz. As I look it up now, there are plenty of Schlitz beer commercials where their slogan was, go for the gusto. I don't know that I've ever gone for gusto before, but if I did, it wasn't with Schlitz beer, which would explain why, you know, the Schlitz brewery isn't as busy as it used to be.
We may have to ask Luke Mathers about that based on his performance at the Brewers game we went to.
No, that was Pabst. He and the PBR, they are good friends. And That too is brewed not far, just merely blocks away from where the old Schlitz Brewery used to be. The Pabst Brewery now is getting, you know, turned into something very nice, but it's going to take a little while, and you're just not going to see the same kind of, you know, beer there that you used to have once upon a time. There's a nice little brew pub there now in its place. I'm going to hold off on the Brewers because I want Aaron to hear more because he's not aware of how the game went last night. But let me start the preview sports just by saying the winter sports are done, and Miami did not win either one of them, neither the NBA Finals nor the Stanley Cup Finals, as the Vegas Golden Knights are your NHL champions, defeating the Florida Panthers in 5 games. And doesn't that just sound right, that, you know, the reigning hockey capital of the world is in the desert of Las Vegas, Nevada?
You know, I don't know if that's better or worse than Miami anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, either one, it was just a little weird. And I'm not going to have any stories about Packers minicamp. I'm just going to say I saw it come up on the TV while I was out to dinner, and I realized I was feeling nothing, like no tightness in my chest, no anxiety, like, oh God, what's Aaron Rodgers going to say this time? What's he going to do this time? I was just able to enjoy watching the Packers in minicamp, getting set for the season. I just feel like a load has been lifted, and we're going to have a better season regardless. I suddenly understand why my girlfriends dumped me back in the day. They just feel better. The world's a little lighter. Fine, Aaron, don't come to my defense. I'm good with that. Let's take a break. We'll go through a headline, somebody having a worse day than me being dumped, and that, of course, would be Donald Trump. We'll be back. You're up north. On this day in 1980 that Billy Joel released the album Glass Houses. We'll have more to say about that in our history lesson and music break coming up a little later on this hour. All right, Aaron's going to keep his mic open to hear all about the drama last night at Target Field. Brewers up 5-3 heading into the bottom of the ninth. Devin Williams on the mound for the Crew in a save situation. He has been perfect in save situations this season. Has almost never given up a home run overall. Michael Taylor, first man up, home run. Brewers are still up 5-4. Williams then gives up a walk. Pinch runner comes in, steals second base. Next batter up, Williams gives up a line drive single. The pinch runner comes home. We are now tied at 5. Next batter, Carlos Correa, puts a 2-run walk-off homer into the left field seats to cap a 4-run bottom of the ninth off the usually dominant Williams, giving the Twins a 7-5 victory over the Brewers on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say. I'm just glad that I wasn't there.
You know, and there were obviously a lot of Brewers fans there. They, you know, they go to Target Field for the games there, just as Twins fans come down to American Family Field. It was a perfect evening in downtown Minneapolis. I'm sure it was a great time, and it was a great time for Brewers fans for the first 8 innings, and maybe a lot of them left at that point feeling pretty good. The short 2-game series with the Twins wraps up this afternoon. Colin Ray on the mound. The Brewers' 5-game losing streak means they are still in second place, 1 game behind the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Brewers are off tomorrow before starting a 6-game homestand, starting with 3 games this weekend as those Pittsburgh Pirates come to town. So despite any misgivings you might have, get yourselves out there to American Family Field and let's will the Brewers back into the win column. Listeners of Civic Media radio stations can hear the Brewers on a couple of different hometown stations here in the Oshkosh area. Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, and in the Richland Center area, News from the Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM, your home for Brewers baseball there.
You know, I've never really understood the people who just leave sports games early, that they're like, we're losing or we're winning. Like, aren't you there for the experience? If you're going to a movie, you're not like, obviously Luke Skywalker is going to beat Darth Vader. All right, I already know how it ends. Goodbye.
I guess I never thought of it that way. Yeah, you feel like it's going to go where it's going to go, so I'm just going to leave now. I got to beat traffic, you know. You never I guess, beat the traffic. If you're beating the traffic, you are leaving way too early then, you know.
Yeah, you're at the game for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's it. It's that Geico commercial where the group is talking about how to leave the game even as they're walking into the stadium. That's the only way. Otherwise, just accept that that's part of the experience, like you said, and watch the whole game.
Yeah, you never know. Stick around. Something fun might happen.
As the Twins proved, you know, for all you know, it could have gone to extra innings and the Brewers could have won, but alas, they did not. All right, Donald Trump has become the first former president in history to face a judge on federal charges. He pleaded not guilty in a Miami courtroom Tuesday to dozens of felony counts accusing him of hoarding classified documents and refusing government demands to give them back. Inside the courtroom, news reports say that he sat silently, scowling, with his arms crossed. A lawyer entered a not guilty plea on his behalf in a brief arraignment that ended without him having to surrender his passport or otherwise restrict his travel. The arraignment, though largely procedural in nature, was the latest in an unprecedented reckoning this year for Trump, who faces charges in New York arising from hush money payments during the 2016 presidential campaign, as well as ongoing investigations in Washington about the 2020 election and the January 6th riot, and Atlanta into his efforts to undo the results of the 2020 race. Presidential historian Michael Beschloss said it pretty well. This was the never-before-seen arrest of an ex-president on grave federal criminal charges related to national security. And because we and a free press have been barred from watching and hearing it in real time, we didn't see Trump. We didn't see him on camera in the courtroom. The accused man managed to make it look more like a triumphant motorcade arrival. That was one of my big beefs with the coverage of this, something that I'm sure I'll get into with Mark Jacob again on Friday morning. But both for the flight down on Monday to Miami and then the motorcade on Tuesday, in both cases, you had news channels that were doing essentially the slow speed chase. You know, something like an hour or more of just a static shot, you know, of the motorcade moving down the highway, both in up on the East Coast and then down in Miami. And then when Trump was done, he basically went into campaign mode, apparently went to a diner and tried to shake some hands there as well, but nothing inside the courtroom. And then, of course, Trump went back to his country club and gave a speech there. And yet there was nothing from inside the court. Not that I'm necessarily, you know, always for cameras in the courtroom for certain things, but to not be able to see that essentially let Trump control the visual narrative. At one point, Jake Tapper on CNN had to on air instruct his control room to stop re-racking the footage of Trump, you know, shaking hands, because that's not what yesterday was about. Yesterday was about a president, an ex-president, facing the potential of prison time for putting national security in danger. And yet, as many people noted, the two justice systems of the United States came starkly into play yesterday with the fact that there was no mugshot. There was no passport seizure, and he essentially went free without bond. It was said that Trump is not a flight risk because he's so well known. Are you kidding me? The man's got jets at his disposal. You don't think he could go off to some place and evade the charges and say, you know, I'm done with the U.S. I can't get a fair trial there, so I'm just going to stay here until I'm reelected president, and then I'll make my triumphant return or something like that. How a judge doesn't put on severe restrictions on travel and who he can talk to His personal valet is also facing charges. And as I understand it, normally criminal defendants are not allowed to be talking to one another and coordinating what they're going to say. And Donald Trump is nothing if not a master at coordinating what you would call witness tampering and having everybody get their story straight and be on the same page and basically undermine the facts that are trying to be uncovered in a court of law. Donald Trump truly got the kid glove treatment, and yet he is out there professing to be a victim, and right-wing media is playing along with it. At one point, I believe it was Fox News, had a chyron up on the screen, a little graphic of President Biden saying something about, you know, wannabe dictator gives remarks from the White House while he prosecutes political opponents. You know, truly trying to make it seem like, in the words of Ron Johnson, a banana republic. When what you really have happening here is finally some justice and accountability. There is now the potential that Donald Trump faces accountability for his criminal activity because Ron Johnson and other Republicans in the United States Senate lacked what I would call the testicular fortitude to actually convict Donald Trump on things that he was so obviously guilty of doing. The things that, again, put at risk everything from national security to the state of our democracy. Now, he may not necessarily be convicted. A jury may exonerate him entirely and say the federal government didn't prove their case. Or it may be that all it takes is one juror to be a holdout and lead to a hung jury. And again, maybe Donald Trump is never convicted of these things. But it's important that we still go through with the exercise because he's not special. He's not above the law. He shouldn't get treatment any different than anybody else would be if they had taken classified documents out of their secure area, stored them clumsily, referenced them publicly, and potentially allow them to fall into hostile hands. That's something that you don't just let go. You wouldn't do that. It doesn't pass the other shoe test. In other words, imagine if this were Hillary Clinton and those boxes were in her bathroom. Do you think Ron Johnson would then be saying, oh, you can't prosecute her? It must mean we live in a banana republic. No, stop it. Again, they can't stop talking about people like Hillary Clinton or Hunter Biden. But as I'll say again, if Hunter Biden actually committed any crimes, let's see the charges. And if he indeed did commit crimes, people would want him locked up. They're not going to make excuses for him. That's how our justice system is supposed to work. But Congress is, the Republicans there are so focused on playing games and potentially, again, grinding government to a halt that they can't get anything done. There are various factions in Congress, especially in the House of Representatives, that either are with or opposed to Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. There is a so-called Freedom Caucus, basically the furthest of the right-wing fringe in Congress. And apparently, there are fellow Republicans there who gave them an earful. And to hear it told by one CNN reporter, Congressman Derek Van Orden was among them, slamming the Freedom Caucus in what was called a heated, expletive-laden speech during a closed-door meeting yesterday morning. Van Orden told colleagues his daughter is dying of cancer, and yet he still shows up to work, quote, every effing day. He also complained that he's been trying to introduce other bills that would save lives, like one about train safety, but he said it's not the crap, he used a different word, that gets on Fox News. One of the Freedom Caucus members, Congressman Chip Roy, responded saying that he has constituents too and that he came to Washington to shrink government, which already tells you that he is not deserving of the title of congressman because there are constituents in his district who have earned very vital services that he now wants to cut but will not cut things like, say, the military, because again, two different standards. As a result, these games are keeping Congress from doing anything productive. They're even leading fellow right-wing conservatives like Derek Van Orden to get frustrated, and we're all getting nowhere in the process. All because they can't quit Trump, even after everything that they've seen. All right, we'll do a little political climate check with Melissa Baldoff coming up next. You're up north. Your chances, don't ask me why. Don't ask me why. Climate check, as we do midweek each week with Melissa Baldoff, about, well, there's no shortage of topics related to the climate, and some of it today will be a bit about the political climate. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing well, thank you. Especially as we move toward what may be the beginning of the home stretch of the state budget process. But of course, there are many moving pieces, and we're going to talk about part of that. What a record state budget surplus could mean at the local level for climate efforts. But to get there, Melissa, let me set this up first with a story out of Montana, where the headline from the New York Times says a landmark youth climate trial begins in Montana, where 16 young people argue the state is robbing their future by embracing policies that contribute to climate change. And what they want is they hope the judge will order the state to consider climate impacts when approving new projects. But of course, Republican lawmakers have already approved a law that prohibits state regulators from considering the effects of climate when assessing large projects like new power plants or factories. So all in all, Melissa, the how do you want to call it, the back and forth on what to do about our changing climate is a matter not just in international circles and in Washington, D.C., but state capitals as well.
Right. And, you know, it just kind of goes to show you how seriously young people take this issue and how important it is to them, because this is really about their future, their ability to have a healthy future, that our environment will be safe and healthy for them and for generations to come. And it's so impressive to watch young people develop in their advocacy on the issues that are so important to them. And I think climate change is, you know, in addressing environmental concerns is really an issue where we've seen young people take charge. You know, we've seen that internationally, like you said, with Greta Thunberg. We've seen it here in Wisconsin. There are youth action teams all over the state. You know, even in middle schools and high schools, I see the advocacy in my community. I've seen it in other communities around the state. So to see these young people in Montana step up and say, you know, basically the grownups who are supposed to be in charge of these things aren't doing their jobs. They're not holding up their end of the bargain. They're not even considering doing the right thing. And so these young people said, you know what, we're going to step up and we're going to try to make a judge make you do the right thing. It's not where we should ever have to be. We shouldn't have to rely on, you know, young people who should be, you know, doing their, you know, finishing college or starting their careers, learning something new about the world, just making their way into the world. We shouldn't be asking them to solve all these big problems because, you know, the grownups who are supposed to be in charge can't get it together. But we've got these young people who are stepping up, and it's very impressive. And, you know, I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of hope that that elected leaders will be forced to do the right thing on any kind of speedy timetable. But I do hope that this is, you know, part of the process of making change and getting our leaders to do the right thing.
Well, because the young people not only have to overcome legislative barriers, but attitudinal barriers in their effort to get something that should be rightfully theirs. You know, older generations should have left the campsite cleaner than they found it, and they have not. And that is what led to this. But here's what I mean by an attitudinal barrier. They in Montana, these young plaintiffs, want to say the judge to declare that the state support for the fossil fuel industry is unconstitutional, that the state government has failed to live up to its constitutional mandate to, quote, maintain and improve a clean and healthful environment in Montana for present and future generations. But the Republican assistant attorney general there says something that I know, Melissa, you've heard 1,000 times. Montana's emissions are simply too minuscule to make any difference. Climate change is a global issue that effectively relegates Montana's role to that of a spectator. How many times have we heard that because we can't solve the entire globe's problems, there's no reason for us to do anything?
Exactly. And, you know, because too many people want to take that approach and take that attitude, that's where we end up in this problem. If everyone could do their part, everyone could do their little bit, then that's what's going to be what makes a difference. You know, if there was one simple, you know, snap of the fingers that would solve everything, I'm sure someone would have tried to monetize it and do it. The fact of the matter is, this takes everybody doing their part. It takes every level of leadership being willing to do the right thing. Even though they can't on their own solve it, this really is a, you know, something people have to solve together.
Right. And, you know, one last note from Montana. They note that the effects of a warming climate are already spreading there. The shrinking glaciers at Glacier National Park, a lengthening wildfire season that threatens some treasured outdoor pastimes, and so on it goes. That, again, it brings us back to what can we do here at home here in Wisconsin? When you think of actions that can be taken at the state and the local level, what kinds of activities do you encourage, you know, beyond, I mean, this lawsuit is one thing. It's been tried in other states as well. But what are some other things that folks closer to home can do about a global issue, but in their backyard?
Right. I mean, I think one of the most important things that people can do, quite frankly, is, you know, a lot of people, when they think about how we're taking action on the environment, on sustainability, on climate, you know, they think, do I recycle? Am I trying to get an electric vehicle? Am I putting solar panels on my home? And all those things are really wonderful things that, as people are able to do, of course, they should try to do that if that's something they can. But I really think one of the most important things people can do is vote. That is one of their, you know, that is our superpower that we have, is that we are able to make sure we get people into office at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. You know, we heard a couple weeks ago when we had Allison Carlson on from the Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition, we heard about all of the great work that is happening at the local level in our units of government around the state. And for people to be really mindful of what is happening in their local governments, in their communities, I think is such a big part of this, because that's where so much of the action is happening in states in this country.
Well, isn't another example of that found in what legislative Republicans here did by rejecting an expansion at the University of Wisconsin College of Engineering and the petty cuts that they made because of, you know, DEI programs to attack, you know, diversity and equity and inclusion. I mean, these kinds of cuts and rejections from this state legislature, they're related to the climate in terms of, again, what that next generation can do to, you know, make things better around here.
Exactly. You know, we know that we are so fortunate to have the University of Wisconsin system in this state, innovating, you know, leading the charge on so many of these efforts to mitigate the effects of climate change. You know, you think about the funding for, you know, UW Extension, where we've got folks in the counties helping people on, you know, resiliency issues, you know, helping them with recycling programs, with, you know, urban ag, and so many resources, you know, from the university system really make a difference in our communities. It's not just about the students who are there, and it's not just about the professors who are there and the staff. I mean, it really is about what impact the UW system has on our communities as a whole and on our state as a whole. And, you know, that's just one more reason it's so incredibly short-sighted to be cutting money from our higher education system. It's hurting our communities. It's hurting our residents around the state.
And action on this can take place at many different levels. When I was looking at information about, you know, what can state and local governments do, one particular website broke it down into 5 areas. I'm going to throw all 5 at you, and then you grab whatever you think is something important that folks can know about what can be done. They talk about buildings and energy, And that, of course, makes sense. There's land use. There's transportation and fuels, obviously. There's consumption and materials management. That sounds like a very important thing for like cities and counties and things like that. And then there's simply, you know, community well-being, you know, having clean air and things like that. I don't know if you present a list like that any differently when you talk to folks about a changing climate, but when you look at all of those areas, are any of them especially, you know, in vogue right now, or any that you would especially encourage? What do you talk to folks about at the local level when it comes to climate?
What I talk about, and this is, you know, important to me as a local elected official myself, and I'm speaking just as myself, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the Village of Shorewood. But you know, when we're making decisions, it really is about what are the decisions we can make now that are going to be important now, that is going to help us be a good steward of taxpayer dollars now, but also have an impact in the future. And what I hear a lot from people are ways that we can improve energy efficiency. That is something that can have an impact right away. So, you know, you might see local communities in the process of updating our streetlights. Some of our communities have really old infrastructure that is not compatible with, you know, LED bulbs or energy efficiency projects. You know, if we're, you know, building a new building, how can we make it more energy efficient to not use as much, you know, take as much heating costs? So those are the kinds of things that I hear about a lot, things that can have like kind of an immediate impact and are going to be sustainable for the future. But I do also hear a lot from my colleagues in local government about electrifying their fleets. So many of our local communities have a lot of vehicles. You know, we have some of our larger cities have a bus fleet that they manage. And then we've also got, you know, every community has snow plows, has, you know, the trucks that the DPW staff uses, has vehicles that are shared, you know, police cars, you know, everyone's got a fleet of vehicles. So we do hear a lot about that, about electrifying fleets, which is something that, you know, is a big energy cost and a big opportunity to do something to reduce emissions there.
And then finally, taking it to the truly hyper-local level, the individual level, you have the Inflation Reduction Act, which has all manner of incentives for individuals, small businesses, and others to, again, be more efficient and not contribute as much to the problem. And yet, part of the debt ceiling deal worked out with President Biden was a demand by congressional Republicans to claw back some of those funds. So, Melissa, that kind of takes us full circle to what you were saying, that of all the things you can do, solar powers and electric cars and everything else, voting is also a part of how you can have an impact on the climate.
It sure is, you know, and I was just my husband and I were just chatting the other day about our energy bill, this most recent one, and it was nice and low because the weather was so good, we didn't have to run our heat or our air. And just in a couple months, people are going to be getting those expensive heating bills again. And you think about, you know, why we wouldn't want to take every opportunity to help people get assistance if they are eligible for it, because there is a lot of energy assistance available to folks, or to make improvements around their home to make it to where it's more affordable for them and that it's more reliable. So, you know, it's just incredibly short-sighted when you see attacks on these programs that we know are going to help people, help them save money, and help the environment.
We get our weekly climate check from Melissa Baldoff, and we are so appreciative of it. Thanks so much, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Another climate note I wanted to pass along, this one also at the state level, and it's from Arizona, according to the New York Times. As Arizona's two major sources of water, groundwater and the Colorado River, dwindle from drought, climate change, and overuse, officials are considering a hydrological Hail Mary, the construction of a plant in Mexico to pull salt out of seawater, then pipe it hundreds of miles, much of it uphill, to Phoenix. Now, the idea of building a desalination plant in Mexico is something that's been discussed in Arizona for years, but now a $5 billion project proposed by an Israeli company is under serious consideration, an indication of how worries about water shortages are rattling policymakers in Arizona and all across the American West. It just, Aaron, it reminds me that people they forget how the Great Lakes are, what a freshwater source they are, and that we have to make sure not to allow the same thing here, basically sending a giant straw to suck the water out like they're thinking of doing to the ocean over hundreds of miles. It's not inconceivable it could happen here.
It just sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud.
It does, doesn't it? It looked like a serious news story, and then as I'm reading it out loud, you're absolutely right. But goofier things have happened. All I got to do now is tell you that Foxconn is going to run the plant, right? But no, just kidding. That's not the case. But again, in the case of ways that I wouldn't spend your money if I could. Melissa Kay from locally grown radio WFHR joins us for today's history lesson and music break next. You're up north. Billy Joel fans know what this is. It is Sometimes a Fantasy from the album Glass Houses. And of course, all of us in high school at the time couldn't wait for the next line. Oh, that was so naughty to breathe heavy on the phone like that. Melissa Kay joins us from locally grown radio WFHR. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
We bring all that up because, as I mentioned earlier, Billy Joel's seventh studio album, Glass Houses, went to the top of the charts this day in 1980 and would stay on top of the album chart for the next 6 weeks. Plenty of hits off of that one. And yeah, I got to say, in my high school, that album and what was REO Speedwagon? High Infidelity, where they were played nonstop. I mean, they just were. And I think maybe Loverboy. I don't know. When you think of albums that were played nonstop or you know, artists in your high school days, guys, what would be? It's kind of like word association. High school songs and artists that were played repeatedly. Go. Oh, you both are just blanking out on me, aren't you? It's radio, Aaron. You got to talk.
Ace of Base comes to mind for me.
Ace of Base. Okay, Aaron?
I got to say, it's a lot of the same stuff from middle school that I heard, where it's like, if you're going to a school dance, the last song is going to be Good Riddance, Time of Your Life by Green Day.
Of course. Yes. See, a Green Day, perfectly acceptable answer there. Here's who you wouldn't have heard. Burl Ives. A singer from the mid-20th century, is born this day in 1909, passed away in 1995, but you still hear him every holiday season singing, Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. Guess whose birthday it is today, kids? Former President Donald Trump turned 77 years old today as a free man. And we'll just leave it at that. There we go. Happy birthday, Donnie. On this day in 1775, the Continental Army is established by the Continental Congress, making today the birth of the United States Armed Forces. And a couple of years later, the Second Continental Congress on this day passed the Flag Act of 1777, adopting the Stars and Stripes as the flag of the United States. Melissa, were you a Girl Scout or anything like that, where you had to learn like the flag code and how to properly, you know, fly it and display it and everything else?
I did that in my grade school. I went to a one-room country schoolhouse when I was in grade school, and my favorite job was flag duty because it was the easiest job. And you got to go outside and put the flag up in the morning and take it down at night, and we learned how to fold it properly. And on every Thursday, we would have our flag ceremony where we'd march up and we'd sing the anthem and, you know, pledge allegiance.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and everybody was taught back then to treat the flag with reverence. And now you see politicians and parades who basically, you know, wear it as a cape or in some other fashion on them.
And that's part of the code. You're not supposed to wear it.
I know. And yet some people just don't seem to have an issue with that. This is a birthday in 1961. This was the birthday for Boy George, born George Allen O'Dowd, lead singer of Culture Club. He is 62 years old today. I got to admit, I had to double check just to make sure that he was still with us. I get him and some other singers mixed up as far as whether, because he went through a horrible heroin addiction. Maybe still is for all I know, but I know that that's what claimed George Michael and other folks. I had to double check on Boy George.
I had to also.
I'm surprised he's only 62.
Yeah, 62. Yep.
Wow.
This is also the birthday of Fighting Bob La Follette, born this day in 1855, the 20th governor of the state of Wisconsin. He passed away in 1925. Mm-hmm. On this day in 1970, the Grateful Dead released their fourth studio album, Working Man's Dead, with some shorter songs than their previous albums. We'll hear Casey Jones a little later. Uncle John's Band was on there. Tunes that made the band a bit more accessible. On this day in 1971, Emerson, Lake & Palmer released their second album, Tarkus. The number one song on this day in 1975 was by the band America. Does that guitar lick sound familiar, like little George Harrison, My Sweet Lord? Well, it could be because the producer of Sister Golden Hair was the Beatles' infamous producer, George Martin.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so...
And again, all we had in 1975 was AM radio, and that song, of course, was completely unstoppable. Are you bringing up My Sweet Lord?
Yes.
Look at that. Look at you. It's like, what a little mix master you are. It was on this day in 1996 that George Martin was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II, and rightly so. He was a musical genius, even if he did occasionally borrow, you know, one guitar lick for another song. That could happen. Speaking of borrowing from another song, Puff Daddy did that this week in 1997 with I'll Be Missing You, his tribute to the late Biggie Smalls.
Lost someone truly love. Check it out.
Seems like yesterday we used to rock the show. I laced the track, you locked the flow. So far from hanging on the block of dough. Notorious, they got to know that.
And given that this was 1997, it was kind of that era where some of us were going, we weren't quite sure what is, when is it sampling and when is it plagiarism?
What is it stealing?
What is it just stealing? Did Sting and the Police, did they get credit for Every Breath You Take on this? And does P. Diddy, does Sean Combs have to pay royalties? Does he have to give writing credit? I'd like to know where that all, because back then it was still kind of a, can they do that? Really?
I am pretty sure that they do have to get it cleared with the artist. I know a lot of songs that I've looked into where I've been like, this is literally the exact same riff. I look at it and the songwriting credit goes to the original song or things okay. like that.
Well, I would certainly hope so.
Hope so.
And finally on this day in 2002, Mick Jagger was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Let's see. Roger contributes on Facebook. We'll talk about high school songs that are stuck there. Thriller makes
oh,
perfect
yeah.
sense. Oh, my goodness. How do you escape that, you know? Melissa, tell me, the morning shows, they kind of shifted around a bit on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. How's that gone?
We did. It's going well. We have our sunrise show on our country station, WIRI 105.5. It's an FM station, and we have country coffee and conversation. We talk about country news and happenings and listen to country music. It's great. And then that's from 7 to 8. Then we pop over to WFHR from 8 to 10 for our traditional morning show over there. And well, so we're just bouncing around.
Okay. Is there a lot different from the one show to the other? You know,
not a ton, except country music.
I like country music.
Yes, so do our listeners.
Bet your listeners do too. Well, eventually I'm going to be starting a show just on 93.5 The Tap here in Chippewa Falls at some point in the next few weeks or so. And so I might have to drop in on your show and maybe borrow some ideas. See if
Absolutely.
I can.
Absolutely. We would welcome you.
I would love them. Hey, you have me on, I'll have that cross pollination. It works so well here at Civic Media, you know?
We love it.
Melissa Kay, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too, guys.
All right.
Thanks for the history lesson.
As always, we appreciate it. Appreciate you being here. Back with more. You're up north.